Broadly, I'm going to talk about the concept of lead generation, not as a specific tactic within marketing or sales, like telemarketing or pay-per-click, or between them in the form of lead qualification, as are alternatively and colloquially used. Rather, lead generation is and should be your business's fundamental go-to-market strategy. Given this broader scope, lead generation encompasses both marketing and sales, and among its most critical attributes is that the paradigm ultimately describes how marketing can be held accountable for sales. Therefore, when implemented, as we'll discuss, a lead generation strategy can enable a business to achieve superior levels of growth, acquire a dominant market share, and maximize its sales profitability. As originally described way back when in classical marketing theory, lead generation is a hybrid business development strategy that combines the marketing and sales functions in such a way as to enable a business to create and manage what we refer to as qualified sales leads. As opposed to today's typical approach that differentiates between so-called marketing qualified leads, or MQLs, that have a low probability of closing, and sales qualified leads, or SQLs, that are really pseudo-objective opportunities, by focusing on and generating and managing only qualified sales leads, QSLs, a lead generation strategy can enable a company to fill its sales funnel with real opportunities that have a high probability of closing successfully, profitably, and relatively quickly. A lead generation strategy can therefore ensure profitable revenue growth and market share growth for virtually any business at the lowest possible cost and with the least amount of risk, waste, effort, and in the shortest amount of time. Sadly, as a strategy for achieving business growth, lead generation is widely misunderstood and it's wildly misapplied. For example, lead generation is often viewed as a promotional tactic, such as telemarketing or pay-per-click advertising, that a company can somehow bolt onto a failing marketing or sales program in order to save it, even though it's probably too late. Or worse, it's viewed as a catch-all for generating waste or junk, or it's sometimes used as a synonym for buying a list. But true lead generation is an all-encompassing business growth strategy that incorporates and bridges the gaps between the marketing and sales functions. It's a reliable and time-tested approach describing precisely how revenue and market share growth can be achieved in virtually any market and for virtually any product or service. And most importantly, for most businesses that adopt it, it's an approach that works, works well, and works consistently. Okay, so let's talk about the problem. According, for example, to recent U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, approximately 20% of all new businesses fail during their first 2 years, and over 50% of all businesses fail within the first 5 years, a trend that has been growing worse over the past decade. More surprising, though, is that the failure rate for technology firms, particularly those that are receiving external funding, is far worse. According to a January 2022 analysis by CB Insights, for example, more than 70% of all tech startups fail, usually around the 20-month point after first raising financing, with an average of a $1.3 million loss in total funding. Highlighting this trend, according to the December 7th, 2023 New York Times, over 3,200 venture-funded businesses failed in 2023, losing over $27 billion in invested capital. Now, while creative destruction is a feature of capitalism and not a bug, such failure rates in this particular population would seem to raise questions about entrepreneurial insight, if not the vetting capabilities of the investors and the investment management communities. But it's especially concerning when one considers the reasons that people cite for failure. Analysts often place the blame on individuals on a case basis, but the primary reasons mentioned tend to fall into a few surprising categories, such as not satisfying a need, a bad business plan, a lack of financing, a bad location, inflexibility, and too rapid expansion. But does any of that really make sense? What private equity firm would fund a business that didn't satisfy a need? And who would fund a venture that had a bad business plan? And who wouldn't throw good money after good or move if they had to? There is obviously something else going on. And what's going on is that when measured by their impact on sales, most marketing programs fail and fail spectacularly. We've worked with hundreds of businesses over the last 30 years, and we've spoken to many thousands of business owners, investors, solution providers, and so on. And it's evident, particularly in the last decade, that most of these companies fail, not because there's no need for their products or services, and not because they have a bad business plan. They fail because they are summarily ineffective at marketing and sales, and most are ineffective because they buy into a model of marketing and sales, one that's been promoted enthusiastically by the digital platforms and the marketing profession itself, that in most cases simply cannot work. Setting aside the dubious and self-serving explanations for the high failure rate of these PE-funded companies, there are a number of data points that can help us understand the broader problem, starting with the impact of the online platforms and media like Google, Amazon, and Facebook, and LinkedIn, X, YouTube, Instagram, and most of the other platforms. But we need to go back in time to get some context and some perspective before we issue the indictment. That is, the historical benefit to businesses in their pursuit of growth of the web when it was new was that it could remove barriers to visibility, such as the traditionally high cost of advertising and media access. Every business would have a storefront on the internet, and if you build it, they will come. Building out these websites and getting visibility online were the foundations of Web 1.0, a legitimate enough enterprise from a business perspective, even if it hurt the traditional and especially the print media. After a while, however, because of the large number of businesses on the web, it became necessary for a tool to emerge, search, that would help buyers navigate the web and find what they needed from a galaxy of potential vendors, sources, and websites. The problem was, of course, that weak antitrust enforcement and Section 230, as well as natural selection, allowed Google to dominate the search market. This meant that businesses had to kowtow to Google's algorithms, software that literally controls people's perceptions, if they wanted to get visibility and generate leads. So entire industries have since grown up around learning and guessing what would make Google and the other search sites happy and enable businesses to gain a position on the first page of their search results, to the point where today search engine optimization, inbound marketing, content marketing, email marketing, digital marketing, and the thousands of other technological progeny and enablers constitute a $200 billion industry, all just to break through the clutter and stimulate some demand, which Google often controls. The problem is that for most businesses, none of this works, and the reason is limited real estate. That is, there is, for example, on the first page of Google search results, room for maybe 10 or 15 organic hits, which means that 95% or 98% or even 100% in the case of scammed search terms of the businesses that are seeking visibility so they can generate leads online will basically get none. And of course, it makes you wonder why Google search results are paginated or instead of scrollable, but you know, that's something for another day. Anyway, according to Semrush, which is one of the leading providers of search engine marketing capabilities, fewer than 1% of websites can maintain a first page ranking for even 1 year, and those are the winners. Even worse is the potential buyer when the potential buyer doesn't know they have a need, as in the case when a business is trying to introduce an innovative solution. What's the user supposed to even search on? At least in the days of print, a vendor could buy a quarter page ad in a trade journal and know that it was going to get in front of the reader's hands, while today you could spend 10 times as much money and get no visibility and no leads whatsoever simply because it doesn't fit the algorithm. And so businesses play the game, and then they fail. A similar thing happens on Facebook in the consumer market, LinkedIn for business, as well as on the other platforms. Companies spend billions of dollars on ads for these platforms, hoping to get an impression, a click, and maybe a sales lead. But given the competition for eyeballs, fewer than 1% of the companies that advertise on those sites, and that's usually only the ones with absolutely the most money to spend, which of course belies the whole point of the web, ever get a positive ROI on it. As a fallback, these sites are more than happy to sell you their users' data, which businesses pay huge sums to exploit using thousands of different tools, most of which are equally ineffective while being startlingly intrusive. But the tens of billions of dollars that these platforms rake in each year does little to help the advertisers who spend it, many of whom slowly and quietly go out of business. So then there's Amazon, the killer of retail, who exploits businesses with something on the order of a 35% commission and the enablement of questionable reviews that skew results such that a legitimate business has little chance of thriving in that toxic ecosystem. And as with Google and Facebook, Amazon's business model encourages their vendors and advertisers to compete on the basis of price, further squeezing margins. So anecdotally, and that's all I can go on in this case, we've talked to almost no manufacturers in the last few years who sell on Amazon who are happy with it. And it's the only game in town, unfortunately, for most of these companies, most of whom die in a race to the bottom. And if you're a business that sells through VARs, channel partners or retailers, for example, the problem is doubled. Not only do you have to fight to gain visibility in your channel, but you may also have to generate and pull through demand from the end user. Good luck with that. This real estate problem forces advertisers to bid up the cost of visibility on the platforms, at least those that have traffic, while lowering their own prices to marginal cost because of competition, a problem that's made worse by the limited number of platforms and the existing platforms' attempts to hinder their own competition. So for many businesses, the answer is to try telemarketing or direct marketing in order to go around the platforms and stimulate demand. There are literally thousands of call centers to choose from, many of whom are willing to work on a pay-for-performance basis or a pay-per-lead basis using some semi-literate script reader and a high-speed dialer. But trying to get the attention of a real decision maker by reading a script is a fool's errand. And just because you're not paying up front doesn't mean it doesn't cost you anything. Most companies end up regretting the time they wasted, the reputational damage, and the opportunity cost even more than the money they threw away on an unsuccessful campaign. Even worse than the pay-per-lead scam is the siren song of the guarantee. The reality is that there are no meaningful guarantees in marketing insofar as getting sales results is concerned. That's as opposed to simply doing something for the sake of doing something. It's usually nothing more than cheap insurance, worthless when you go to make a claim. I mean, ponder this. If you're only willing to pay for a set appointment and refuse to pay just for the effort, what's to stop the agency from bribing a prospect with $250 for a half hour of their time to listen to your pitch, after which they will not buy, and then charging you $500 and pocketing the difference? Nothing. And he'll do it because you can't incentivize him enough to risk his own business on your promise to pay for the leads. And if you think that setting lead qualification criteria is going to help and you're only going to pay for leads that meet it, think again. Your agency is far more experienced in gaming the system than you'll ever be, and they'll be happy to take your money until you get tired of receiving bad leads. Ultimately, the sad truth is that just because you have to offer your customers a guarantee, that doesn't mean your marketing vendor can or should. But if you insist on it, as many business owners do, you're usually signing your own death warrant. And the games that marketing vendors play, coming from one who spends time in the business, to take advantage of their customers are endless. Do you want to get a page one rank on Google? It's easy, as long as you define your market small enough to the point where you can't acquire new market share beyond your Google-defined competitive geographic boundary. Do you want to get a better response to your emails? It's easy, as long as you're willing to get your domain tagged as a spammer to the point where you can no longer communicate with your customers. Do you want to get a higher pay-per-click response? It's easy, as long as you're willing and able to outbid your competitor to the point where you have no margin left on your closed sales. We hear horror stories like this every day from companies we talk to, and it's the main reason why they fail. Business owners looking for easy answers when it comes to finding new sales, because that's what everyone promises. So they're forced into buying solutions that make no sense, that can never work, and then failing. The poster child for this, of course, is the concept of a marketing qualified lead, or an MQL, and it's the cousin of a sales qualified lead. So it's originally developed by the CRM providers as a way to help users manage leads. The MQL has become an end in itself for many marketing departments. Whether an MQL equates to waste is not subject to debate. MQLs are the very definition of waste. Likewise, to give the sales department veto power over qualification criteria is to metaphorically put the fox in charge of the henhouse. So the whole MQL-SQL concept is nonsensical. So let's talk about employees. Now, the staggering amounts of money involved in the shift from old media to new has also resulted in an almost complete co-opting of a generation of marketing and sales professionals. That isn't to say that people aren't entitled to be transactional with respect to their careers, but the lack of accountability enabled by the current system doesn't stop the office door. For example, over 60% of marketing and sales managers interviewed by LeadGen.com in 2021 were no longer in the same companies in 2022. In that same survey, covering about 250 firms, over 75% of the companies did not make their revenue objectives in 2021. According to a LinkedIn survey, marketing positions had an average turnover of 18 months, at 18 months rather, of 60%, while sales positions had an average turnover at 18 months of 55% in 2021. Note, while the more commonly quoted one-year turnover rate averaged about 20 to 25%, the number jumped significantly in both categories after a full year on, which is easily explainable by their failure to make quota. And the five-year survival rate for businesses dropped below 50% for the first time. Given these observations, the question that you need to ask is whether the high turnover rate among sales and marketing personnel is correlated with the high failure rate of the businesses. And if it is, which it turns out to be, is turnover a cause of the high business failure rate, or is it an effect? Clearly, it's the job of the sales and marketing departments to generate revenues, and their failure to effectively accomplish that goal has to be the cause of the business failure, and they're simply getting out of dodge before it's too late. But then, does it really make sense to blame so many different individuals for the failure of so many different businesses? Can they all be that bad at their jobs? Well, it turns out that while many individuals may be competent with regard to their specific functions, say as marketing or sales, as a team responsible for delivering revenue, because it usually takes a team to achieve a revenue goal, they're often highly incompetent. And we know this because we know at a very detailed level what most of the companies in our survey have been doing with respect to their sales and marketing programs. And it's not a pretty picture. Sales and marketing functions together just can't accomplish their mutual revenue goal. And by the way, if you're a business owner and you think that hiring a marketing director is going to solve your problem, think again. They may know everything there is to know about social media marketing, inbound marketing, email, and content marketing, but are they willing to be accountable for revenue? Generally not. Maybe they'll say they have no control over what the sales team does with the leads, and you'll agree, or they'll say their job is to get traffic, exposure, clicks, hits, downloads, but not revenue, and you'll agree to that too, because you don't know that there's an alternative. But did you ever think about why turnover in marketing professionals is over 60% after 18 months? Maybe they know something you don't. And the salespeople are no better. When you hired them, they probably told you that if you can just get them in the door, they can close anyone, right? How's that working out? Or maybe they're generating their own appointments, but they just can't close them because of the pandemic or competition or pricing, or they don't have time or the war or the weather. But don't worry, you gave them enough of a base to hold on for a while, didn't you? So maybe you think that hiring a chief revenue officer is going to stop the finger pointing and solve the accountability problem. But do you really think you're going to be able to find someone who has enough experience and expertise in both marketing and sales in your industry to manage both functions effectively, especially when marketing is actually designed to avoid real accountability? And how is this not just moving the deck chairs around on the Titanic if they're still playing the platforms game? One thing you can count on, though, as soon as they see that they're not going to make their numbers, their resumes will be back on the street. All right, so what's really going on? The reality today is that the platforms, marketing professionals, and the marketing industry have created a situation that gives business owners the illusion of control and the hope of success. And they've enabled all manner of agents, digital marketing vendors, software developers, website developers, consultants, list vendors, marketing experts, technology, and even your own employees to help you play and keep you in the game. But in most cases, if you play their game, you can never win. You might get by, it's unlikely because of the statistics, but the odds are much higher that you will lose everything. The platforms will simply continue to get richer because they're nothing more than arms dealers, and your business is simply cannon fodder to them. And the marketing vendors will move on to their next mark, and your employees will get another job. And in case you're wondering who's paying for all this, it's not just the business owners, it's the investors who are often also business owners, exacerbated by the staggering amounts of money that's floating around. It's why the return on savings and investments are so poor. And it's why venture capital firms, who used to require, say, 35% of their portfolio to make money, are now grateful if 5% do. But it's also one reason why wealth keeps concentrating, because only the wealthiest can tolerate such risk levels. The shortcoming of today's marketing and sales model, which separates the marketing and sales functions, are clear and abundant. And it's the unequivocal cause of the high failure rates. But it comes down to this: if your company is spending a lot of time and money on marketing initiatives, and those initiatives are failing to produce enough or enough good sales leads, and if your company is spending a lot of time and money on sales programs, but they're failing to generate adequate profitable revenues, you're not going to fix it by simply appending another promotional activity onto your current failing strategy. You're not going to solve the problem by putting lipstick on a pig, like lead scoring, and AI isn't going to come to the rescue because it was trained on the exact same flawed assumptions as today's conventional wisdom, and the current channel platform problem isn't going to go away without effective antitrust enforcement. If yours is like most businesses that we talk to, you're going to have to rebuild your entire go-to-market strategy from the ground up based on the lead generation paradigm, what we refer to as the missing link between marketing and sales, because it's the only thing that can solve the problem. So lead generation, or lead gen for short, is a powerful hybrid marketing and sales strategy tasked with creating qualified sales leads, thereby filling your company's sales funnel with viable sales opportunities that have a high probability of closing successfully, relatively quickly, and profitably. To be clear, lead generation represents a very different way of looking at marketing and sales, but it's actually an old paradigm, although for many businesses, it's one that may need to be resurrected. This is because, planned and executed properly, a lead generation strategy can ensure highly profitable revenue and market share growth for virtually any business at the lowest possible cost and risk and in the least amount of time. What makes lead generation different from other strategies for growth is that it starts by analyzing a market opportunity and setting a revenue goal, as opposed to the typical advertising, digital marketing, or promotional program that may have a goal of generating exposures, impressions, clicks, downloads, connections, click-throughs, traffic, attendance, inquiries, responses, appointments, demos, or some intermediate KPI, or a typical marketing campaign designed to establish brand identity, position a product vis-a-vis competition, create awareness, or educate the market, for example. The goal of lead generation is profitable revenue production, often using the expected value of the sales funnel as an interim metric. That is, while traditional approaches to marketing almost universally demur on the subject of accountability for revenue, the lead generation paradigm embraces it. For example, instead of a marketing department ceding responsibility for the achievement of a revenue goal because there are too many uncontrollable variables involved in moving an opportunity through the sales cycle, or because the marketing department typically has no authority to control sales resources, or because they lack the adequate tools or access to the prospect to influence the close rate, the lead generation paradigm offers a simple yet powerful set of tools and techniques that enable both the marketing and sales departments to exercise effective control and accountability from the earliest stages of the sales cycle to the last. Likewise, instead of the sales organization tolerating the production of marketing qualified leads that likely will never close or even be worth their time, an effective lead generation strategy drives the criteria for a lead being a qualified sales lead back into the marketing process and enables only legitimate qualification criteria to be incorporated. As a result, instead of pandering to the organizational gap between marketing and sales or resorting to finger pointing when the company doesn't make its numbers, a properly designed lead generation strategy enables and encourages effective collaboration between marketing and sales, including the rapid debugging and remediation of failing programs without having to assign blame. So let's dig in. Accountability in lead generation starts with the sales funnel, as it was originally described by Miller and Hyman in their famous book, Strategic Selling, shown here. According to their time-tested approach, there pre-exist in any given market suspects who are above the funnel that is not yet in it. This can be an addressable market, a list, a target market, a population, the public, or some other pool of potential buyers. By definition, these potential buyers are initially assumed to be unaware of the vendor's existence, products, or value. But through various marketing, promotional, and sales initiatives, some of these potential buyers or prospects become aware of and interested in the vendor's product, or at least they're identified as being worth pursuing by the vendor, which makes them see prospects. Then, following a series of steps in the sales cycle and mirrored by the buyer's journey, some of these people become B prospects, and yet with more work, some of these become A prospects, and with still more work, some of these ultimately become customers. In brief, what creates accountability in the process, according to the lead generation paradigm, is that every prospect in the sales funnel must be assigned a potential revenue and a probability of closing once they've been identified, or at the latest, once they've been qualified. This can be done collaboratively by marketing and sales or by one of the other departments, but assigning a potential revenue and a probability of closing must be done before it can be considered a qualified sales lead and enter the conversation, even if the potential revenue and probability of closing are a guesstimate or are low. The product of these two figures, that is, the potential revenue times the probability of closing successfully, then creates an expected value, which, when tied to an expected close date and aggregated over all prospects, can generate a highly accurate monthly revenue forecast for the company. And it's this common sales forecast that the lead generation strategy, which should control both the marketing and sales organizations, can now be held accountable. And if it's managed collaboratively, that is, during regular sales meetings, it's what makes a lead generation strategy unique, powerful, self-correcting, and effective. As potent a tool for creating accountability as this linkage of the marketing program to the sales forecast and the sales funnel is, since a lead generation strategy also allows flexibility with regard to the ownership of any given lead at any given time, which can easily be negotiated during these sales meetings, it leverages resources, it enhances responsiveness, and it prevents opportunities from falling through the cracks. This reflects the fact that the sales funnel has traditionally been used as a time management tool by salespeople, and as such, it acknowledges that there will be times when a sales team, for example, can't work on particular leads because of other priorities. And so these leads may have to be nurtured, potentially by marketing department or by a business development function or by someone else. But this is e an easy problem to manage using load balancing if and only if everyone is accountable to the same sales forecast. This is illustrated in the example here. At the beginning of the month, shown on the left side of the table, for example, the sales team might work on anything that moves. But at the end of the month, shown on the right side, when they have to make quota, they may have to prioritize working on only those accounts that are closest to closing. In the traditional model, where leads only move one way from marketing to sales, accounts JKL, MNO, PQR, and STU might be neglected for a while, thereby increasing the probability that they will fail to close successfully. Under the lead generation paradigm, however, responsibility for moving opportunities through the sales cycle switches explicitly and automatically back to marketing because neglect and waiting are not options. This approach, supported by most conventional CRMs, can easily ensure that opportunities like these aren't neglected or delayed because of limited resources, changing priorities, time pressures, or misplaced accountability. Instead, it enables the company to dynamically reassign ownership of leads and continue to move the ball forward with as many prospects as possible, as quickly as possible, and as effectively as possible. Another feature of this approach is that changing lead qualification criteria, driven by changing market conditions, competition, resource availability, or clutter in the media, might also require that leads get passed back and forth between sales and marketing for clearance, for requalification, for implementation of specific steps that maybe only one or the other group can do. While the traditional siloed roles of marketing and sales, to say nothing of inflexible or one-way lead ownership rules, have difficulty accommodating such contingencies, no less enabling joint accountability for revenue, this lead generation model encourages it. This is why this model of lead generation is sometimes thought of as the missing link between marketing and sales. We'll come back to this high-level view of lead generation later, but next we need to take a deeper view into the mechanics of lead generation. So let's go under the hood. Lead generation is a strategy for sales growth that utilizes the marketing mix, sales and sales management, information technology, media, third-party solution providers, and other tactics and activities to ensure the generation of qualified sales leads and the production of profitable sales revenue. But it is not itself a promotional technique. Rather, it represents an approach to managing marketing and sales in order to achieve a revenue result, and not a particular tactic or even a particular phase in the sales cycle. Importantly, the lead generation model doesn't differentiate between an MQL and an SQL. Rather, lead generation only seeks to generate qualified sales leads, or QSLs, or opportunities that are broadly defined as an expression of interest, typically in B2C, or an appointment, typically in B2B, with a qualified prospect, that is someone who has potentially has the ability to buy and who has a qualifying need, that is a need that you can fill, and who wants to talk with you about how you can help. There may also be other attributes of urgency, budget, authority that contribute to the definition depending on the situation. Unlike the binary MQL and SQL concept, of course, the definition of a qualified sales lead in the lead generation model implies that there may be a spectrum of qualification criteria, which is another advantage of the approach. That is, what constitutes a qualified sales lead can be an expression of interest, or it can be an appointment in the lead generation model. And in fact, depending on the situation, it can sometimes be weaker, like an intent signal, or even a name on a mailing list, or it can be something stronger, like a confirmed appointment, a BAM, or even an order. What constitutes a qualified sales lead, in other words, isn't static in the lead generation paradigm, but rather it can be dynamic, varying depending on a wide range of circumstances, timing, and condition. This variability associated with changing lead qualification criteria, as well as the typically variable effectiveness of the sales process, both sensitize the probability of closing and can even impact the potential revenue in the sales forecast, making it an important yet flexible management tool. Obviously, activities that increase the probability of closing and the potential revenue are good and they should be encouraged, while activities that decrease the probability of closing or the potential revenue are bad and they should be avoided. But the approach enables these to be more effectively managed. So with that as background, we can now explore the sales cycle and the sales funnel in more detail, which will enable us to understand where lead generation fits and how to use it to achieve success. Although Miller and Hyman conceptualized the sales funnel in the early 80s, many people and many companies have customized it to reflect their own view of the sales process, if not to serve alternative agendas over the years. After developing many successful marketing, sales, and lead generation programs for hundreds of different companies over the last 40 years, we've kind of settled on a version that covers most situations, particularly in the B2B space, which also by design aligns with several proven approaches to sales training, as well as with recent developments in understanding the buyer's journey. While it's not required to hew to this particular version, the specific steps will be slightly different, say, for a B2C campaign. The main thing to note here is that the model effectively ties together three of the most important management tools when it comes to sales and marketing into one framework: the sales funnel, the sales cycle, and the buyer's journey. This is because they are, in fact, three views of the exact same process linked, when managed correctly, to the sales forecast that I discussed earlier. If you can't link them, by the way, that's a clue that your process is going to fail. We'll go into more detail regarding how these concepts fit together later, but for now, it's important just to get a picture of the general process so that you can understand how and where the lead generation strategy fits and how it can be leveraged to ensure success. For example, referring to the buyer's journey here, the suspects typically start out as unaware of the vendor and unconcerned with what the vendor can do for them, and then moving from the top to the bottom through a series of steps, usually driven by an increasing awareness of need and the value that the vendor can offer in satisfying that need, the buyer becomes first weakly interested in the vendor and their products, and then progressively more strongly interested until the buyer decides to evaluate, and ideally from the vendor's perspective, approve the purchase. Driving the buyer through this process usually is the responsibility of the vendor, who executes a series of steps known as the sell cycle to identify and target potential buyers and promotes to them in order to create awareness and stimulate interest, qualify them, magnify the need, create urgency, persuade them to buy, and fulfill their purchasing requirements. This, however, brings us to a core controversy associated with lead generation. As you may recall, while some marketers equate lead generation to the promotion step on the diagram, or they use the term lead generation interchangeably with advertising, telemarketing, email, pay-per-click, or some other promotional technique, doing so is taxonomically and functionally incorrect, and it's often intellectually dishonest. This is because the output of a promotional activity is, by definition, a promotion, while the output of a lead generation strategy is, by definition, qualified sales leads. And the difference could not be more stark. For example, when we set expectations for a typical promotional program, while it's often hoped that there will be some positive impact on revenue, it's almost never directly held to account. At best, there may be some KPIs associated with clicks, hits, views, impressions, responses, downloads, or some other metric. But most often, it's simply the placement or insertion that's rewarded with a nod to the KPIs. Given that these KPIs don't typically exist on the sales funnel or forecast, there's no way in the traditional model to link the promotional activity to the actual production of revenue. Putting the sales funnel would actually make the problem worse. And therefore, promotion can't be accountable, and second or third order accountability simply doesn't count. It's also a, if not the major reason why many companies fail, the disconnect between marketing and revenue production we talked about earlier. On the other hand, the output of a marketing initiative within the lead generation paradigm is, by definition, a qualified sales lead, something that exists explicitly on the sales funnel as a qualified prospect who has a qualifying need and wants to talk to you about how he can help. Unlike some promotional tactic, a lead generation strategy is therefore specifically designed, by forcing marketing to participate in the funnel management process, to populate the sales funnel with opportunities that have an expected value, and if it doesn't, then it has failed. While a promotional tactic that's designed to push out a message, and it can easily succeed in that role while failing entirely to drive the production of revenue. Okay. While this direct connection to revenue production that characterizes the lead generation strategy obviously differentiates it from promotion, other differences show that it's more than simply a matter of hobbled attribution or even how one characterizes the output. It is, in fact, the entire process of putting together an effective lead generation strategy that differentiates it from simple promotion. And before we explore that process, it's important to understand how the generation of qualified sales leads fits into the sales funnel and why the approach is so critical beyond just the benefit of revenue accountability. Look, first, it should be obvious that in order to generate a qualified sales lead, an initiative has to do more than just make people aware of you or push out a message. Because you're trying to stimulate interest, get the prospect to want to engage with you, and take some action to move the sales process forward, that is, you want to create at least a C prospect, if not a B or an A prospect, it's often necessary to understand and target the prospect's needs, behaviors, and triggers. And in order to activate those triggers, you may need to reposition your product, your brand, or your company, and you may also need to convert that interest into action, which often requires causing a response, which often means justifying their time, overcoming objections and inertia, and triggering a behavior. And the program will almost certainly need to qualify the leads to make sure that they're worth the salesperson's time. These issues, though, illustrate the main impact zone of the lead generation process in the sales funnel that can be anywhere in the first four or even the first five steps of the sales cycle. And that's shown below, not just the first one or two. In other words, a lead generation strategy can and should create awareness, stimulate interest, get you in the door, qualify the prospect, and potentially even uncover needs. Anything else leaves money on the table and, more importantly, is a recipe for failure. The implication of this impact zone and the accountability of lead generation allude to a point I mentioned before. That is, it's almost impossible to append some random lead generation tactic to a failing marketing program and expect it to fix your sales problem, as we show in the marketing 2.0 view, because the assumptions underlying the marketing program are probably wrong. Likewise, investing in a lead qualification effort, which is shown in the marketing 2.0 repair view, in order to fix bad leads, is simply throwing good money after bad. Instead, if lead generation is strategically superordinate to both the marketing process and the sales process in the lead generation model here, then you have the best chance of success. Consequently, marketing programs need to be built from the ground up, primarily to generate qualified leads and not just to accede to the limits of the media or demur on accountability. And sales programs need to be subordinate to the big picture and not have the opportunity to blame their failure on marketing, timing, competition, price, or workload. Thus, the lead generation considerations either need to precede the development of the marketing program, or more practically, the owners of the marketing program and the sales program need to subordinate their priorities to it. The success of this approach has been illustrated in hundreds of cases where we've worked and companies where we've been asked to turn around their sales, particularly since the rise of inbound and digital marketing, where businesses may spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on their website, SEO, advertising, case histories, collateral material, sales sheets, sales training, pay-per-click and blog posts, LinkedIn connection requests, banner ads, click funnels, conversion pages, content, emails, and even telemarketing efforts, only to generate virtually no real qualified sales leads whatsoever. Almost to an instance, these programs were developed not with lead generation or even a sales funnel in mind, but as a set of tasks the company believed that they should do, either under the misguided influence of a marketing professional, an employee, a platform, or vendor, none of whom would ultimately be accountable for sales. And so when they try to tack on a so-called lead generation tactic to salvage some ROI, it almost always fails because the prerequisites and the underlying assumptions were fatally flawed. And to be clear, accountability itself doesn't solve the problem, as illustrated by the number of catastrophic failures resulting from pay-per-lead, commission-only sales reps, and so-called back-ends and guarantees. Skin in the game simply doesn't guarantee success. It usually just guarantees that a lot of time will pass before you find out that you've missed the market and then your business goes under. Okay, so let's talk about building an effective lead generation strategy. Developing an effective lead generation strategy can be a bit complex, not necessarily conceptually by making marketing accountable for revenues, for example, so much as because the components needed to build an effective lead generation strategy are often not done, or they're done poorly, or they're done in the wrong order when developing a traditional marketing or sales program. As a result, you may not be able to just plug in certain components, such as a better positioning, value proposition, media plan, or even proper features and benefits of your product if you've already built most of your go-to-market strategy on ones that aren't going to work. You may have too much invested in collateral material, documentation, training, channels, sales decks, for example, and it can be expensive and pretty unpopular to change, even if staying with what you have means failure. Of course, many marketers and even many salespeople are more than willing to fail as long as the job market remains strong. Building an effective lead generation strategy, though, almost always has to go back to the basics, an identification of the market you want to go after, the specific needs you want to satisfy, and the products or services that you can sell to differentially satisfy them. Assuming that a reasonable business case, accounting for things like willingness to pay, competition, addressable market size, fulfillment cost, and so on, either formally or informally can be made for the initiative, the next step is to put together a few things that are really critical. Okay. The first is your prerequisites, or the foundation or story on which your lead generation strategy will be built. The second are core components, or the intellectual assets on which your messaging will be constructed. And the third is your storefront, or your presence on the relevant and available media. I'm not going to go into great detail here about how to develop each one of these. We're just going to touch on them briefly for a lead generation strategy. And different strategies may have slightly different requirements, but the foundation on which an effective lead generation strategy generally consists of the following prerequisites. First, case histories, actual cases if they're available, or prospective cases if your product's not yet in use. You do a needs analysis. These are detailed descriptions of the relevant needs, pains, problems, and unmet goals of potential buyers. You do an applications analysis. You describe how the product is or will be or can be used to solve those needs. You do an economic value to the customer analysis, or EVC analysis. That's derived from the applications of the product or service in use. And you do a competitive analysis. Identify your competitors and their strengths and weaknesses. These different documents and analyses enable you to begin to answer some key questions from the prospect's perspective, which is frankly the only one that matters, such as why should somebody talk to you, why should someone meet with you, and why should someone ultimately buy from you. If you can't answer those questions in a compelling way, and that is persuasive to a disinterested third party, based on these analyses, then the program is very likely to fail. These prerequisites then enable you to develop what we refer to as the core components of your lead generation strategy, and I'll just read those off. These are statements of value proposition, positioning statements, targeting criteria, available media and channels, initial benefit statements, screening criteria and questions, probing questions, objections and rebuttals, and concrete steps on the buyer's journey. Although some of these core components may seem relevant only to a cold calling program or an email campaign or perhaps to a retail role, it turns out that they apply to any kind of marketing or sales campaign that needs to generate qualified sales leads. And that includes digital marketing, content marketing, advertising, networking, SEO, social media, or PR, to name just a few. The reasons why should be obvious because of the integration with sales, but you need to create them all regardless of the specific promotional strategy you're planning on using if you want to be successful. Finally, you need to establish your storefront using these core components in order to get in the game. That is, 50 years ago, all you needed was a listing in the Yellow Pages or maybe a sign over the door or a business card if you wanted to exist as a business. Today, you need at least some of the following to be in the market, and that's a website, a Google business listing, Facebook business page, LinkedIn company page, a social media presence, maybe an Amazon shop, and an email platform. To be clear, though, building out your storefront does not mean you will get any sales whatsoever, contrary to what the platforms in the marketing profession will tell you. And there are billions of websites that get no traffic, millions of Facebook, LinkedIn, and Google business listings that generate zero revenue, and billions of social media posts that don't go viral. Having a presence on the available platform, even if done well, is just the entry fee. It doesn't get you on any of the rides. For that, you need to pay extra. That is, to get in the game today, you need to create your prerequisites, you need to build your campaign components, you need to establish a storefront. Only then can you start promoting your product or service. And while you may be able to do a lot of this preparatory work in your head, without this documented foundation, your chances of success will be severely limited. Because only after you've built these elements does your spend begin to have an impact. with a higher spend being more impactful than a lower one. Regardless, though, without the proper foundation, the spend is going to be a waste. Now, it should be easy to see how you can build an effective B2B cold calling program from these pieces, but if you're building a website, it still needs to answer the question of why someone should buy from you. It still needs to show what needs the product satisfied. It needs to explain who should buy, and it needs to handle objections. And the same holds for white papers, advertisements, blog posts, email, social media, trade show booths, Amazon listings, and more. A strategy developed using the lead generation paradigm, however, can easily handle this. Another issue that companies wrestle with is lead conversion. Many programs, for example, are designed either without consideration for how leads are actually going to make it into and through the funnel, or how engagement with the prospect is going to be caused, or caused often enough, and qualified affirmatively, and so they fail. In most cases, the company will scramble to improve a low conversion rate by trying to tweak a page, a form, a process, a call to action, or some other content, but that also often fails, usually because conversion was an afterthought, tacked onto a marketing strategy or tactic that was flawed to begin with. In the lead generation model, however, the conversion problem is solved up front when you developed your prerequisites, usually when you're conducting your needs analysis, which includes analyzing response triggers and behaviors. Therefore, it can easily be built directly into the strategy and into its supporting tactics. Much like building a traditional direct mail, direct response campaign, the response triggers and processes are designed in from the beginning so you don't have to try to fix something later when it can't be fixed any longer. This results in only qualified leads entering the funnel instead of trying to fix them later, which is, of course, the entire point of the process. The same holds for creating urgency or dealing with the postponement objection in the sales process. If the economic value to the customer analysis was done properly in planning the program, then urgency is created by the mere passage of time and the accumulating cost of doing nothing. The final consideration for this overview is how the lead generation paradigm addresses both failure and success in the remaining phases of the sell cycle, that is, when a lead is in the hands of the sales team. Lead generation can identify the decision process and decision criteria up front so they don't become barriers later. And regarding the failure of a lead to make it through the funnel, the lead generation methodology is designed so that leads can be passed back and forth between sales and marketing for lead requalification, regeneration, or resurrection if needed. And since everyone is working off the same sales funnel, it's easy. You do it simply by changing the ownership of the lead and kicking it back. Not surprisingly, this lead generation model also enables you to know exactly where the process went off the rails, if it does, and why, even if it's due to competition. And therefore, you can usually work backwards in the process, starting from where you recognize the failure to correct a wrong assumption or rebuild another core component, and then move the process forward successfully. Likewise, when a prospect becomes a customer, the lead generation process can easily be adapted to enable resells and upsells, treating the customer like a prospect again and validating the cyclical nature of the sell cycle. In summary, contrary to popular opinion in the marketing industry, lead generation is not some tactic you can add to a failing marketing program in order to save it. Rather, lead generation is a fundamental business growth strategy that incorporates and bridges the gap between the marketing and sales functions. It represents a different but reliable and time-proven paradigm about how business growth is achieved, and most importantly, and for most businesses who adopt it, it works.